Brighter than a Ranjana. Brighter than a Ranjana. Pad Paramahang Subravirakasharya Asadhara Sadushi Shiman His Avangresh Lacey Bhaktivaranta Swaraj Shilabhupad Kijai Gaur Pramanande Haribha Glorious the Sound Devotees All Glorious the Shri Guru and Shri Garanga Mom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Puristaya Bhute Shrimate Bhaktivaranta Swaminte Namane Namaste Sarasvatundeve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskyatyade Siddharne Om Agyana Tvinandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stabitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shigaro Shiyuta Parakamalam Shigaram Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Vrijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakanzitam Cha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabando Dagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchena Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishubhanu Sudadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakapa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Padidanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Shadvaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 10, Chapter 31, Gopi Songs of Separation. I'll read the summary first. This chapter relates how the gopis, overwhelmed by feelings of separation from Krishna, sat down on the bank of the Jamuna and began praying for his audience and singing his glories. Because the gopis had dedicated their minds and very lives to Krishna, they were beside themselves with the transcendental pain of separation. But their crying, which appears like evidence of misery, actually shows their exalted state of transcendental bliss. As it is said, Yata Deka Vaishnavara Vyavahara Duk Nishchaya Jai Niha Se Paramananda Sukh. Whenever one sees a Vaishnava acting unhappy, one should know it for sure that he's actually experiencing the highest spiritual bliss. Thus each of the gopis began addressing Lord Sri Krishna according to her individual mode of ecstasy, and they all prayed for him, for his mercy. As the pastimes of Krishna spontaneously arose in the minds of the gopis, they sang their song, which relieves the agony of those suffering from the burning pain of separation from Krishna, and which bestows supreme auspiciousness. They sang, O Lord, O lover, O cheater, when we remember your smile, your loving glances, and your pastimes with your boyhood friends, we become extremely agitated. Remembering your lotus face, adorned with locks of blackish hair, smeared with the dust of the cows, we become irrevocably attached to you. And when we remember how you follow the cows from the forest to forest with your tender feet, we feel great pain. In their separation from Krishna, the gopis considered a single moment an entire age. Even when they had previously seen him, they had found the blinking of their eyelids intolerable, for it blocked their vision of him for a fraction of a second. The ecstatic sentiments for Krishna that the gopis expressed may appear like symptoms of lust, but in reality they are manifestations of their pure desire to satisfy the Supreme Lord's spiritual senses. There is not the slightest trace of lust in the mood of the gopis. Text number one. Gopya Ucha Jayate Dikatam Janmana Vraja Shrayata Indira Shasvad Yatrahi Daita Drishatam Dukshu Tavakas Twai Drita Savas Twam Vichinvite Gopya Uchu Jayati Te Dikatam Dikam Janmana Vraja Shrayata Indra Shasvara Atrahi Taita Drishatam Dikshu Tavakas Twai Drita Savastvam Vichinvite Gopyuchu Dayata Indra Shasvadatrahi
Dayata Drishyatam Dikshu Tavakas
Dayata Drishyatam Dikshu Tavakas
Dayi Drita Savasvam Vichinvate
Vichinvate Uchu
Thank you.
Ladies, the gopi said, Jayati is glorious. Te, your Adikam, exceedingly. Janmana, by the birth. Braja, the land of Braja. Shrayate is residing. Indira, Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. Shasva, perpetually. Atra, here. He, indeed. Daita, O beloved. Drishitam, may you be seen. Dikshu, in all directions. Tavaka, your devotees. Twai, for your sake. Drita, sustain. Asava, their life heirs. Twam, for you. Vichinvite, they are searching. Translation and purport by his divine, by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. The gopi said, O beloved, your birth in the land of Braja has made it exceedingly glorious. And thus Indira, the goddess of fortune, always resides here. It is only for your sake that we, your devoted servants, maintain our lives. We have been searching everywhere for you, so please show us yourself to us. Purport. Those who are familiar with the art of chanting Sanskrit verses will be able to appreciate the especially exquisite Sanskrit poetry in this, of this chapter. Specifically, the poetic meter of the verses is extremely beautiful. And also, for the most part, in each line, the first and seventh syllables begin with the same consonant, as do the second syllables of all four linea, of all four lines. So the text again. The gopi said, "O beloved, your birth in the land of Braj has made it exceedingly glorious, and thus Indira, the goddess of fortune, always resides here. It is only for your sake that we, your devoted servants, maintain our lives. We have been searching everywhere for you, so please show us yourself to us." Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatundeve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskya Dhyade Sadharane. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the sixth chapter, Krishna says, "Yatra paramite chitam niruda yoga sevaya yatra trevatmanam pashanatmani tushiti sukhamat yantikam yattad buddhi grayam atundriyam vedi yatra nachayvayam sitas jalati tatvataha yam lava chapalam lavam manite nadikam data yasmin sito nudukena grunapi vichalyate tam vidya sukaduka yogam yoga viyogam yoga samgitaha." That state of trance is called samadhi, when one's mind is completely restrained from all mental activities by the practice of yoga. This is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and to rejoice in that self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness and enjoys himself through transcendental senses. In this state, one thinks that there is no greater gain and one is not disturbed in spite of the greatest difficulty. This is actually freedom from all material miseries by the practice of yoga. So yoga is meant to bring us to this platform of unlimited happiness, which goes on forever. But there's a difference between our theoretical knowledge, called jnana, and vijnana, actually experiencing. Krishna consciousness is not just a philosophy, it's supposed to be an experience. In the spiritual world, the gopis don't study the Srimad Bhagavatam, they experience it at every moment. That's, they live in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now we ourselves, we're hearing about the highest ecstasy, the gopis feeling separation from Krishna, and we fall asleep while we're listening to it. Does that mean that the gopis are not, it's not a very exciting or interesting topic what they're talking about, these feelings of the gopis? No, if we could actually experience what they were experiencing, then we definitely would become enlivened and we become very interested. Unfortunately, for a conditioned soul, his present existence is like coming to the, when we come to the Bhagavatam class, whether it be the 10th canto or the first canto or the second canto, it's almost like coming to the feast, but you put a glove on your tongue. Now the prasadam may be fantastic, and everyone else without a glove is relishing it, and they're asking you, how it is it? Well, it tastes a little plain, the feast. Not that the prasadam is not wonderful, but we can't experience it because our sense of taste is covered over, and therefore we can't actually relish what actually the tastes are. Similarly, if we had transcendental senses, if we had transcendental consciousness, we'd be able to actually feel what the gopis are feeling when we read the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And if we're not feeling that, we can try to feel it according to our best ability, but we shouldn't try to equate the gopis' feelings with something mundane, because we can feel it, and then automatically we try to relate it to our experiences in the material world. Because that's our natural tendency. We see everything according to our experience. Sattvana rupa sarvasha shada bhavati bharata shada mayo yo purusha yo yachchara sevasaha. That according to one's conditioning under the three modes of material nature, one has a particular kind of faith. So we all have faith, we all have experience, we all have our understanding of things, and therefore according to our faith, we act, and then we develop another experience, which gives us another faith, another perspective on reality. But actually, even more important, as Prabhupada writes in the second canto, for the conditioned soul, it's more important to hear about Krishna's pastimes in the illusory energy than it is to hear about his pastimes in the spiritual energy. But we have to learn how to hear with the right attitude from the right source, because we can also hear Krishna's pastimes in the illusory energy, in the material energy, and also fall asleep, thinking that this is some has no relevance to me. There's some huge person with four arms, and he's breathing out universes. And we're in one universe, the smallest of the universe, out of billions and trillions of universes. And he lies down in an ocean. That same person expands himself. And from his pores of his body come the Garbhodak ocean. And then from his navel comes a four-headed person who, in the lotus that he's born on, manifests all the planets. And we're on some planet or in Bhumandala, wherever we are, hearing about these four-armed people doing all these things. So the tendency, whether we're hearing the 10th canto, or hearing the first canto or the second canto, it's also extraordinary. We think, how can I really believe in this? I have no experience. How many times have you seen people lying down in a river with four arms, and then from their navel sprouts a lotus flower? Anyone ever see that? Any experience like that? And then on the top of the lotus flowers, some man is born with four heads. No, we have no experience. So what do we do with it? The general tendency is just put a shit aside, because I'm a Hare Krishna. I believe everything, officially. Although I don't believe hardly any of it, really. Therefore, there's a process of realization. There is actually a science to experience these things. But the science is not just some theoretical science that you one studies day and night, and then somehow or another a light of bliss comes down from the sky and everything is understood automatically. It's not exactly like that. Actually, the first thing to do is to hear. But the question is if we're actually hearing and what we're hearing. So generally speaking, even when we're in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the speaker should make it relevant to our lives. It should make it something we can do. If we can't do something, what we're hearing, then what is the value of it? Now, if we had higher consciousness, we'd be doing something when we heard this 10th canto. We'd be living it, experiencing it. But if we're not experiencing it, then we have to do something so we come to the platform of experiencing it. So that takes some sincerity, some honesty. Those who are sahajiyas, they're, Prabhupada said, they're imagining. They're not really experiencing, so they just imagine that they're experiencing it. That imagination means they equate their own experience with what they're reading in the 10th canto. And therefore they can come to the conclusion, as we heard the other class, that the more girlfriends you have, the higher your consciousness is. Now, for those of us, when we hear the 10th canto, we're not experiencing it, or we hear the first canto when the Pandavas, the first time I came to the Hare Krishna temple to hear Srimad Bhagavatam class in 1968, the first class I heard, I didn't know, I mean, we only had the three Srimad Bhagavatams. We didn't even have a Bhagavad Gita. So I obviously didn't know a whole lot about the philosophy. But the first philosophy I heard in a class was Ashwatthama was throwing a Brahmastra weapon, an atomic weapon, at Arjuna. And the whole universe was about to be destroyed. So my depths of realization of that particular Srimad, part of Srimad Bhagavatam, was not extremely deep. I had nothing to relate it to. Although I did remember it, because I happened to read it afterwards. In any case, our philosophy should be actionable, should be something we can do to experience, ultimately, to go from one level of consciousness to the next, so we can actually experience the 10th canto. That's what the first 9 cantos are about. So what is it? How do we hear? Shushusho shadadanasya vasudeva kataruchi syanmahat sevaya vipra punya tirta nishevana. So this verse, first canto, second chapter, su means nicely. It means broad-minded. It means we have to put aside jnane priyasam unapastanamanta eva. Mental speculation means that we're hearing and we don't do anything. That's called mental speculation. We're hearing, it has no effect on us. It's just on our superficial intellectual level. It doesn't enter into our heart at all. We don't feel anything. We're not inspired, really, except to more mental speculation. We don't want to do anything. Or as Prabhupada used to say, these persons came from India to the West, and they'd sit around in these very elegant rooms with their tea and their coffee, and the Swami would be dressed in very nice silk with a turban on, and all these old ladies would sit around discussing the gopis' pastimes with Krishna. And then they get up, go out and smoke cigarettes. Because it didn't enter their hearts, it didn't enter even their intelligence, it didn't enter into anything. It was just some social club for mental speculation. So what is the first thing we have to do? Shushusho shradadanasya. The whole idea is that we're listening, as Prabhupada would write many times, those who are actually sincere about Krishna consciousness, the discourses amongst the devotees will actually be fruitful, will actually have an effect. So what does that mean? We're hearing so we can do something. It can change our lives. We should have a plan and a mission and a vision how our lives are going to be changed. What we're going to do. That's the whole idea. If we have no plan how to change our lives, we have no desire to change our lives, we don't see ourselves, what we're trying to achieve, and we can't even communicate what our desires are, what we're planning to do in the future to make progress in Krishna consciousness, then how are we going to organize our lives around Krishna consciousness? How are we going to apply it to every aspect of our lives if we don't even know where we're going or how we're going to get there? So, tat chadadana, shushusho shadadanasya. This faith means we're hearing because I believe it. If I do this, then I'll actually make some progress. And what is that progress? How do we make progress? Shushusho shadadanasya. Shushusho shadadanasya. Shadadanasya. We have to perform devotional service with care and attention. That's why we're hearing. How to make our devotional service more careful and more attentive. More, as Krishna says, tesham satatam yuktanam bhajantam priti purvakam tadami buddha yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted, that's care. Actually, that's not care. That's attention. That we don't allow our minds to just wander all over the universe while we're doing devotional service, or when we're not doing devotional service, allow our minds to go all over the universe. That's attention. Tesham satatam yuktanam, connected with Krishna. Krishna and his devotees are affectionate. They're loving. They do everything very carefully to please Krishna and his devotees. So that's care. Yuktanam, bhajantam priti, priti purvakam, with love and care, affection, devotion. Or as Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, the art of Krishna consciousness is the art of focusing one's attention and then giving one's love to Krishna. So first we do things steadily, sadhana bhakti, and then we try to do it very nicely, very carefully. Not that we hand someone a book on the street and we push it into his stomach. No, we hand it to him very nicely, as if it's something very valuable. Then people will appreciate it. Otherwise, the devotees used to have this reputation, like they have this one cartoon in America, they had it, which Srila Prabhupada laughed when he saw it. There's one man walking down the street, the airport, and you see the devotee putting out his hand, a big hand, to greet him. And the man shakes his hand, who's walking down the airport, and suddenly you see this cloud of smoke. Bang, bing, whatever, you know. And when the man's foot is out in the air, his leg is in the other part, and then the smoke clears, and the man is unconscious on the floor with a book stuffed in his mouth, and the devotee's walking away counting the Lakshmi. So that's not exactly care and attention. So we have to learn how to do not only book distribution, but everything we're doing, pujari work, cleaning the temple, everything with care and attention, as if Krishna was right there. It's as if Srila Prabhupada was right there. Then what would be the result? If we're hearing something that's inspiring, then we'll actually remember it. If we hear something that could be part of our lives, then we'll remember it and we'll be excited to apply it in our lives. I can remember when I was first doing book distribution in 1968. We had no technique whatsoever. We just, as a matter of fact, we go to the university of Buffalo and we had a quota of 70 Bhakti Godheads per month to distribute. But no one ever thought of, you know, no one knew how to distribute a Bhakti Godhead, what to speak of asking for a donation. So the devotees used to go out and distribute freely the Bhakti Godheads. That was our book distribution back then. And then by 1970, we learned some technique. And it became exciting because we had something to tell people. It may not have been the highest philosophy, and I don't want to repeat all the lines we used back then, but it worked. It worked. Actually, we were getting donations. It was much better than when I went to Houston, Texas. I was there with Vishnujan Maharaj and his servant, Srina, and the only Lakshmi we got was by distributing Bhakti Godheads. And Vishnujan Maharaj, he knew nothing about book distribution. He was a Gandharva when it came to singing, but he knew nothing about book distribution. So just like the Jehovah's Witnesses, he'd stand in the street and hold out the Bhakti Godhead and wouldn't say anything. So he'd collect nothing. And Srinath wouldn't even go on book distribution. But I was the only one collecting. And my only technique was just to pray to Krishna, please send someone. I had some other things. Here, take this or something. In any case, finally we got some lines to say. which I'm not going to repeat them. I mean, I know a lot of different lines. But something like, you know, are you from here? Well, you got a nice family. Wow, what kind of work do you do? Wow, you got a good job. Are you good at it? Whatever. It's just talking to people. Actually, relating to people as if they were human beings. Which is quite a technique. We found out people are actually, they'd actually reciprocate if we actually paid attention to them. And mostly it was, you know, are you from here? Yes. You have any kids? Yes. How many children do you have? I have two. Wow, you got a good family there. Do you like to read? Yes. Do you have a good job? Yes. Would you like to take this book? Okay, why not? So, it takes some practice. So similarly, we want to hear so we're inspired and we get some result. That will inspire us to do something more, to hear more. If we come to class and we don't get any experience, then why would we come back the next day and the next day and the next day? We have to hear something and that we have to remember it, first of all. If we can't remember it, then where is the possibility of applying it? If we walk away from this class or any class and we can't remember anything, maybe we remember some joke the lecturer said. That's all we can remember. No, we have to remember something. It has to remain there. And then we have to see it. We have to visualize what was actually said. I remember one time I was on book distribution. I had dropped off my party from Radha Damodar. And everyone had a quota, including myself. So I only had a limited time because I had to pick them up again, or else they wouldn't go to sleep that night. So I was out distributing books, and no one would take anything because my mind was really agitated. I thought, oh, all these people out there, they don't deserve this book because they don't see a great devotee, me out here distributing it. So then after some time, I thought, well, all right, then maybe something's wrong with me because it couldn't be possible that so many people could be so bad. So I sat down in the van and I read the book, the same passage over and over and over again until my mind finally accepted what it was saying. And it said, I remember exactly what it said. It said that everyone is Krishna's eternal servant. And more or less, if you act nicely to them, then they'll reciprocate with you. So I went out, I said, oh, they're all Krishna's servant, no problem. Hey, take this book. They say, oh, why not? Then the whole thing changed. Because instead of listening to my mind, I was applying something it said in the book. So similarly, if we can remember something and then apply it in our daily devotional service, then Krishna will reciprocate. And lo and behold, we'll actually get some experience. And that experience, when we assimilate the knowledge and see it with our eyes and then apply it with our body, then we'll get some experience and gradually that will develop into conviction. As I said yesterday in class that I gave the Bhagavad Gita class, knowledge is something that we can argue about. We argue about so many things in ISKCON, even in ISKCON. Where the jiva came from, women diksha gurus, who's the greatest acharya, who's the greatest initiating spiritual master in our movement. So many arguments. Just like I gave the example yesterday that Radhanath Mar, but conviction is something that you'll die for. That's conviction. And I gave the example yesterday in class that Radhanath Maharaj came to the Brahmachari Ashram and Radha Gopinath Mandira, and he asked the Brahmacharis there, who will die for me? So the Brahmacharis were quite surprised. And he repeated, who will die for me? So finally one Brahmachari came forward and said, Guru Maharaj, I will die for you. So Radhanath Maharaj said, very good. And he handed him some white cloth and said, make it saffron. But real conviction is something we'll die for, not only your clothes, but more than that. And when it comes to the platform of conviction, what are we convinced about? That if we engage in devotional service, loving devotional service, with care and attention, then I'll make progress in devotional service. Dadami, Buddhi, Yogam, Tam. The more I do my service with care and attention, the more I'm absorbed in it, the more steadily I do it, the more enthusiastically I do it, then the Krishna reciprocates and he gives me the intelligence. How to become more steady, how to become more enthusiastic. He reveals it to us. So devotional service is a combination of our effort and Krishna's mercy. But Krishna's mercy comes when we make the proper effort with a proper consciousness. And what is that? What is that skill we're trying to acquire? Loving exchanges with the devotees. Dadati prati grinaki guyam prichiti guyamakiti prichiti bunte bojayate chaiva shadvidam prati lakshana. Offering gifts in charity, accepting charitable gifts, revealing one's mind in confidence, and inquiring confidentially, accepting prasad and distributing prasad. These are loving exchanges between one devotee and the other. And they should be applied appropriately. For those who are less than us, we try to give them kripa or mercy. For those who are on the same level, we cooperate with them. For those who are higher than us, we follow their instructions, which are coming from the highest authorities, our acharyas. In this way, we engage in loving exchanges with the devotees, and those loving exchanges even are manifested in our relation with others, even innocent people, and even in some way with those who are against Krishna. We neglect them. But our lives become one of practicing loving exchanges. That's the skill. But for that we need transcendental discrimination, which is Krishna gives us, the more we make advancement. Transcendental discrimination and expertise in these loving exchanges. Therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Yari Deka Tari Kaha Krishna Upadesh Amar Aga Gurhana Tari Desh. Whoever we meet, we should try to help them become Krishna conscious. So this is the pastime we're engaged in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Everyone we meet, our husband, our wife, our children, our friends, people on the street, we pray to Krishna, we act with conviction, we act with enthusiasm to try to help them become Krishna conscious. Then Krishna, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. When Krishna sees our sincerity, then he gives us the skill of how to execute that devotional service. He empowers us. He reveals himself to us. He puts us under the energy, the spiritual energy. So his spiritual potency will deliver others. It is not our potency, but we need sincerity to follow the process. We need determination. We need conviction. We need the skill that Krishna gives us coming through our acharyas so that we become a useful instrument. For that, we simply have to give up our desires for sense gratification, our desires for speculation, and accept the actual path given by our acharyas. And if we practice that, and more steadily we do it, then Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. Then Krishna will give us the intelligence to actually experience the path of Krishna consciousness. Wherever we're at, whether we're at the platform, we're just trying to hear, we're just trying to remember, we're just trying to assimilate the knowledge, we're just trying to apply it within our lives. We're just trying to develop conviction. We're just trying to develop skills in our loving relationships with the devotees. We're just trying to come to the platform of having a devotional character, a pure character, which is the goal. The 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the qualities of the pure devotees. We're trying to manifest that, to the best of our ability. And when we come to the platform of pure character, then we'll purely see Krishna everywhere, all the time. Sarabhutastamatmanam sarabhutanichatmani ikshate yoga yuktatma sarvatra samadarshanaha. That the true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized soul sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. And for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to me. So when we develop the character of a pure devotee, our only desire, our only activity will be to help others become Krishna conscious, to practice Krishna consciousness ourselves, and at the same time help others become Krishna conscious. Whoever we meet, we won't see, oh, this is a brahmachari, or this is a grihastha, this is whatever. We'll see that this is a soul in the body of a grihastha, in the body of a brahmachari, in the body of so many different bodies, but my only business is to help them revise their consciousness of Krishna. And if that's my only desire, enthusiastic desire, then Krishna will give me the intelligence how to do it. I'll be empowered to do it. Not only intellectually, but this spiritual energy will be there because Krishna will be there. And that loving, intense spiritual happiness that accompanies Krishna and his devotees will also be emanating from my heart, and that will influence people much more than my theoretical knowledge about how blissful Krishna consciousness is. Just like when Vidura came back from pilgrimage, Marjudhisthira told him, he greeted him with these words, Bhavan Vidas Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhutak Swayam Vibho Tirtha Korvanti Tirthani Swantak Stena Gatabritaha. That saints like yourself are verily holy places of pilgrimage. Because wherever you go, you turn that place into a place of pilgrimage because you carry the Supreme Lord within your heart. So when our hearts become pure, purely intent on serving Krishna and his mission to bring Krishna's other children back to the spiritual kingdom, then Krishna will sit in our heart and he'll direct us. He'll empower us in such a way that that will be done to the best possible way. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, when he was asked for a benediction, when he was asked if he would like a benediction, Prahlad Maharaj said, I don't need any benedictions because I'm already in bliss. Naiva dvije parab dratya vaitaranyas tvavirya gayana mahamrita magniti dak. So I'm already in bliss. I don't need anything. I have you. I have the whole spiritual world in my heart. What more can I want? But so chevi mukha chetasa indriyarta maya sukhaya bharam uvito vimudha. But I'm lamenting because I see these fools. Not as Prahlad Maharaj said, he doesn't say fools. He uses the word vimudhas. Fool is mudha. And super fool is vimudan, or as Prabhupada once said, super asses. Not regular asses, super asses. Because they're working day and night for sense gratification, and they have no idea what love of God is. So I'm working to help them to understand these things. So in other words, if we actually study Srila Prabhupada's books, follow the process of purification, to develop our devotional service in Krishna consciousness, then gradually, we'll become Krishna conscious and engage in devotional service. And one day we'll be able to experience exactly what the gopis are experiencing when they're feeling their separation from Krishna. Prabhupada said, if you put the iron in the fire and keep it there, it'll get hotter and hotter and hotter, and then one day it'll become just like fire. So there is a process, a science of Krishna consciousness. If we understand where we're at now and we try to make progress to the next stage, then everything will be revealed to us. There's no need to jump and try to do anything artificially. So, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Any questions? Yes.
I remember years ago, Satru Maharaj, when our explaining them before he's making all the plan. Sometimes we have that idea that I don't make any plans, I just become a Christian. But if you're constantly mentioning that we should have some kind of plan, we should know where we're going. So how do you consult both ideas that are there?
Well, I imagine what Sadhguru Maharaj meant is that we're not attached to our plan. But everyone has to know where they're going. If you go to get on an airplane, you usually want to find out before you get on the airplane where it's going. You don't just get on an airplane and hope it's going to take you to a nice place. So we used to chant back to Godhead. We had some idea that we're going back to Godhead, and then we were making plans to go back to Godhead. We were making plans to go to the local pizza place. That wasn't our goal. So we have to make plans. Prabhupada writes in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, one should organize one's life in such a way that throughout the 24 hours a day, one cannot help but think about Krishna. And the Lord's promise is that anyone who makes such plans will go back to the spiritual world. So those plans we have to make. But if Krishna, you know, in terms of our ordinary activities, we have to make plans too. If Pancha Godapuru had no plan for the temple, everyone was just Radhe, Radhe all day long. they open the curtains and the deities don't have any clothes on. Wow, Radhe. No, we wouldn't actually make very much progress towards spiritual consciousness. But if somehow or another we make a plan and Krishna has another plan, then we accept Krishna's plan. We don't try to change Krishna's plan. We try to understand what Krishna's plan and make that our plan. Anything else? Yes. Yeah. He didn't give it to him.
Thank you for the wonderful class, Maharaj. My question is, we're discussing the goal of Krishna consciousness to become, you know, absorbed in thoughts of Krishna loving, and just doing this careful emotional service and having our hearts become awakened. But I find that sometimes the process, as we become, say, situated in movement, like when I was a bhakti, I was becoming Krishna consciousness, but I liked the Bhagavad Gita, I liked the Krishna book. Oh, this is such a different personality in Krishna. And then as we become, you know, now we're a leader, ashram leader, now we're a brahmachari, now I have this responsibility, that responsibility. Sometimes we become more identified with those things than actually absorbing ourselves and having those feelings for Krishna that originally made us become devotees, become attracted to Krishna. So I was wondering if you could help us to...
We have to do two things. That's what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mama nusmara yujacha mayarpita manobhudira mame vaishati samshaya. Therefore, Arjuna, you should think of me, but at the same time, you should carry on your prescribed duty of fighting. With your mind and intelligence fixed in me and everything absorbed and dedicated to me, you'll attain to me without any doubt. So we have to practice both. Therefore, Prabhupada wanted us to hear in the morning, hear in the evening. In the meantime, in between, we should practice. So that we apply in our practice, in our service, devotional service, what we've heard in the morning and what we hear in the evening. Now, if we don't hear in the morning, we don't hear in the evening. We don't hear in the morning and understand something, how to apply within our practical service, then we haven't really heard properly in the morning, and therefore our service during the day won't be very much exciting to us. It won't be seen in relationship to our philosophy. It won't be seen as an opportunity to apply what we heard to actually experience our philosophy more deeply. So we have to hear, but we should hear in such a way as that we can apply it during our devotional service so we're actually realizing what we heard. Then it'll become exciting, both applying and hearing, because they both help each other. Anything else? Go ahead.
Thank you, Maharaj. The question is, you're talking about the plans, and you also mentioned about having some mission, vision, and all that. So question is, you know, in spiritual life, you see there is a challenge in the sense, some people come with good intention, some people come with good execution skills they have, but their intentions are not good. Or someone, you know, in material world, we focus mainly on the end product, we focus on the execution. The intentions matter to some extent, but what we focus is on the execution. So in the spiritual life, how do you balance the intention and execution, especially dealing with the subordinates or the juniors? How do you balance both?
You mean you have some goal, practical goal, and you see others as like an instrument to fulfill that goal. How do you balance it? Well, we have to make goals that fit the people. The institution is not meant for the people to fit into. The institution is meant to fit the devotees. Our aim is not to collect buildings or money. Our aim is to increase our Krishna consciousness, to help people elevate their consciousness from material consciousness to spiritual consciousness to devotional consciousness. That's the only reason why we have buildings or money or anything. It's why we have devotional service, to do that. And if it doesn't do that, then we're just shravam eva hi kevalam. It's just a waste of time. We're just wasting our time. We're putting the cart before the horse. We're putting the buildings and everything else before the devotees. So Krishna's plan in Bhagavad Gita is, he doesn't say, I've come to build buildings, or I've come to collect Lakshmi, or I've come to get a good reputation. He says, no. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishasi satyam te pratijani priyosime. Krishna comes so that we can talk about him. So what are we talking about him for? So we can become his devotee. And what do we, when we become his devotee, what do? We learn how to serve him, to worship him. And when we're worshiping, what is our experience? Yaji. We see how beautiful Krishna is, how beautiful his devotees, that we fall in love with him, and we become humble. We feel ourselves insignificant compared to him and his devotees. And then we can give up everything just to please Krishna. Then all the buildings, everything else will come automatically. People want to, just like when Krishna walked in Vrindavan, the trees were offering their honey, their fruits, their flowers, everything they could to Krishna. Everyone wanted to give to Krishna because they were experiencing such happiness by doing it. Then everything that's drawing our mind away from Krishna we'll just reject because it'll interfere with our ever-growing bliss and happiness. And then we'll be enthusiastic to go and share it with others. So everything will come. As we used to say, if you simply go out and distribute books, everything will come. And now sometimes we say, if you simply get everything, then one day we'll be able to distribute books. But actually it works. If we simply understand the process properly and apply it, then everything will be supplied automatically, naturally, by Krishna. Yes, one more question. Please, louder.
You also talked about the importance of exchanges with devotees. I would like to ask how to recognize and avoid offenses in those exchanges.
Well, if someone punches you in the mouth, you can understand that maybe there was some fault in my loving exchange with them. No, we should feel happy, and they should feel happy too. Now, sometimes, when as Prabhupada writes, the qualities of speech, for instance, anuvega karam vakyam satyam priyahitam chayat swadeyabhyasanam chayva vangmana tapuchete. The austerity of speech is to say things which are, well, Krishna starts with anuvega, but Prabhupada starts the translation with anuvega karam vakyam satya. It should be truthful. Satyam priya, it should be pleasing. Hitam, it should be beneficial. And it should follow scriptural injunctions. Satyam priya hitam chayat swadeyabhyasanam chayva. Vangmanatapuchate. And it should not agitate people's minds. So we have to judge our relationships with others by how much they actually accept us as an authority. What level are we? Do they see us as subordinate? Do they see us on the same level? Do they see us as superiors? And explain to them, talk to them in a way which is appropriate. Not according to how I'd like to be towards them, but how they see me. And then deal with them appropriately. And my words should be pleasing, beneficial, truthful, according to what the goal of the Vedas is, to help them become Krishna conscious. And it should, above everything, not agitate their mind. Because if it agitates their minds, it won't be beneficial. It won't be pleasing. They won't understand the scriptures. So if one is a teacher, Prabhupada writes in the purport, if one is on the level where someone accepts you as an authority, then sometimes you can say things which are stronger. But if someone doesn't accept you as an authority, then if we're not acting appropriately, then it'll be offensive to them. To them it'll be offensive. And it won't be a loving exchange. So we have to develop transcendental discrimination and expertise in our dealings. Thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Haribol.